From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. June 1st marks the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season, and although forecasters are calling for a relatively quiet storm season this year, emergency managers implore residents not to become complacent. We take a look at how Floridians can prepare. We'll also explore how social science research is impacting the way forecasters and emergency managers communicate with the public. Plus, the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida is preparing to recruit participants for a clinical trial of a new Alzheimer's treatment that for the first time could slow or stop the progression of the disease. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as many as 5 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease, and that number is projected to increase to about 14 million people by 2050. The cost of care and treatment for Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia will rise to a projected $226 billion this year, according to the Alzheimer's Association, and that's expected to grow to $1.1 trillion by 2050. The disease will have a disproportionate impact on Florida, which ranks only behind California in the number of diagnosed cases. Now, the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida in Fort Myers is preparing to recruit patients for an expanded clinical trial and what could become a milestone in the treatment of the disease. Biogen recently announced results of a small study into a treatment that, for the first time, can slow or stop the progression of Alzheimer's. I recently sat down with the Neuropsychiatric Research Center's principal investigator, Dr. Frederick Sheriff, and the center's director of research education, Angel Duncan, for a conversation about Southwest Florida's involvement in this promising new treatment, the need for Alzheimer's research funding, the role of art and music therapy in treating dementia, and barriers to effective treatment. Let's hear that conversation now. Dr. Sheriff, first of all, I was hoping that you could tell us more about this recent major announcement from Biogen and how the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida is involved in this.
Well, it's a very exciting time, and we appreciate telling people about that. It really changed the world. We at the Neuropsychiatric Research Center have been doing clinical trials in Alzheimer's disease for over 15 years, and the United States and the world has been doing trials, over 400 of them over the years, since this epidemic is just going to take us over financially and emotionally. For the first time in the history of doing clinical trials, 400 or more that failed, there was a trial that was announced by Biogen. It's a company in Boston, Massachusetts, who we've actually been working with, and we were part of this trial that was presented in Nice, France, and the trial only had a small number of people in it, 166, but it showed for the first time that the infusion of monoclonal antibodies, these are antibodies made in a laboratory. The patients actually come to our office once a month and are infused like an IV, has stopped and slowed the progression of the disease. Now, nothing has ever done that before. This disease is a neurodegenerative disease that so far has had no treatment, and even the symptomatic treatments were not there. So this really changed the world.
So this treatment actually can stop the progression or accumulation of the amyloid plaques in the brain associated with Alzheimer's?
Well, that's what the initial phase one, it was a small trial, and it was actually a safety trial. So now it's going into phase three. It's skipping two, and we're going to be one of the sites that's going to get an early start once the FDA and the pharmaceutical company Biogen gives us the green light, and it's going to be a large multi-center trial of 700 to 1,000 people to see if this finding hopefully will continue to show clinical significance. And the interesting thing is, yes, it decreased the amount of amyloid in the brain. Amyloid's the abnormal protein that seems to be killing brain cells, but it also showed two other things. It showed that the cognitive decline associated with Alzheimer's disease was slowed, and also the activities that we do on a daily basis did not decline. So that is very exciting.
How did this end up skipping phase two? Was it just because of the enormity of what this showed promise in?
That's right. They really have fast-tracked it because they got this incredible signal early. And as you know, this is the first time with this incredible amount of pathology. For example, we know that 5.5 million Americans have it. We are the epicenter in Southwest Florida, actually, right behind California with the number of cases, just because of the demographics. Age is the biggest risk factor, and 10% of those 65 have it, 50% 85. And it's going to cost – it's going to break the bank. We spent $200 billion this year. So there's a big push to try to stop the progression. Now, the trials have failed because people have gone to the trials too late. The trials were recruiting people too far along, which makes the point that it starts 20 years before, and that's why we all should start thinking about brain health. And we have other studies that I'd love to talk to you about later for healthy people that are really looking to see if we can find things earlier.
Okay. And as far as being in phase three, what does that mean in terms of getting this treatment more widely available to people, you know, further down the road?
Well, it's estimated by Biogen that if this phase three trial is successful, they could possibly have this available to the marketplace or the citizens of the United States and the world by 2018. So it really could be a fast track in the sense of quickly seeing if the statistics still hold with a large number of people, and it truly shows the efficacy that the phase one trial showed.
Well, yeah. I mean, knowing how long this process usually takes to approve new drugs, that certainly is fast tracking. That's exciting. And folks here in Southwest Florida through the Neuropsychiatric Research Center are going to be part of these clinical trials.
Well, they have been, and they were part of this one presented in Nice. And yes, the trial will be available, and we hopefully will start recruiting sometime in June. And we're looking for people that are interested. And I think we've already received calls from as far away as Colorado for people that want to move here just to be able to get into this trial because it's so exciting.
Wow. Now, how many different people are you going to be working with as far as participants in the trial?
Well, we had a conference call yesterday with the sponsor, and they're interested in they want us to get at least 30 and maybe 45. So it involves a lot of work. You see a lot of people that can't get in because they're either too far along or they have a medical condition. But for the most part, we are given the green light to enroll as many as we can find.
It doesn't sound like you have to do too much in the area of recruitment either if folks from Colorado are reaching out to you already.
Well, it's interesting. We get more of those calls outside of Southwest Florida than in, and it speaks to the problem that maybe Angel can talk to you about of just the perception and some of the barriers that we have locally with this disease. It's similar to psychiatric illness where people really don't want to talk about it. It may have a stigma, and it doesn't hurt enough. I mean, you'll go to the emergency room for something that really hurts you. This doesn't hurt enough until the end.
Angel, can you speak about that? Is that something that you commonly see, folks who they maybe know that they're having signs or symptoms of dementia but just don't want to acknowledge it?
Yeah, denial is a big one. The stigma is a big one, and people are afraid of the big – we were just having this conversation earlier where a lot of people feel like they're going to be a guinea pig. And I don't want to be with an experimental drug, and what's it going to do? So there's a lot of fear, and nobody ever is treated like a guinea pig in these studies that we have. And the big one is just education, appropriate education and advocacy. There's this split, I think, in the community versus, you know, psychosocial treatment versus actual treatment for the disease. And the Alzheimer's Association has been fantastic in terms of supporting support, education, and research. But when we're having this divide of people not supporting research or advocating or not addressing the stigmas, you know, professionally to the public, that's where it really hurts research. So we need to start working more collaboratively as a community and advocating the importance of this disease. We keep building more and more care facilities. If you know, they're sprouting up everywhere around here, and home care agencies are sprouting up everywhere. Well, we need research. Otherwise, we're just going to be one big Southwest Florida care community in terms of psychosocially treating the disease. So,
and in terms of addressing those stigmas and that fear, I mean, does that also extend to, you know, the family members of the person experiencing the dementia symptoms, those caregivers? I mean, you and I have spoken about that extensively in the past.
Yeah, caregivers are extremely burnt out. A lot of we were we had gotten the opportunity to screen Glenn Campbell's documentary, I'll Be Me. We sponsored that here in Fort Myers and in Naples. And last week, Dr. Sheriff and I both got to meet Ashley and Kim Campbell, wife and daughter of Glenn Campbell. And we were on a panel discussion, and there were questions from the audience members who were just now facing the disease that had no idea where to go to, didn't even know there was a research center here, didn't even know there was an Alzheimer's Association. So it really is physicians having, you know, where physicians really need to help better promote that there is an organization that can help. There is a research center that can help. We are not tied to a university, and we're not tied, like we're not the Mayo Clinic, we're not UCLA. And so people may feel like, well, there's this research center, but I'm not sure about it. We're a state of the art. Dr. Sheriff, you know, is a neuropsychiatrist from Johns Hopkins who's been down here 20 years. We would not have these studies. We would not have these sponsors banging on his door trying to get us because, you know, he's very well regarded. So just because we're independent doesn't mean that we're not still state of the art. So,
is there really anything else like the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida that you know of here in Florida that's doing the kind of research that you're doing and, you know, who's really being considered in these types of major trials?
Well, in Florida, the answer is yes. I mean, there's some really good sites in Florida. I can tell you we're the only one in Southwest Florida, I think. And the issue is that the clinical studies now cost $1 billion in this field, and the return is very low. So you have to have excellent data. And we've just been fortunate – I've been fortunate to put together a team. It's not really about me as much as my team that's really gotten a reputation. And for example, the study that we could talk about later called the Tomorrow Study, we're one of 48 sites in the world that have been asked to do this. With the Biogen study, we're going to be one of the few sites that's really given the green light early to start doing this study. So it's really a pleasure, and it's a great thing. The other interesting thing I might be able to tell you is that the world's changing not only with treatment but with our understanding. And when Angel talks about education, we really need to know that one study from the Mayo Clinic showed that over 50% of Alzheimer's disease is probably due to preventable factors. And if you look at, for example, the data from African Americans and Hispanics, they have rates of Alzheimer's disease twice that of Caucasians. And if you say, why is that? It's because of hypertension, diabetes, hypercholesterolemia, and heart disease. Those are modifiable factors. So we need to start thinking about brain health and knowing what we need to do to stay healthy. Exercise, walking can stimulate new brain growth, listening to music. There's all kinds of things that we just need to be smart about. And we need to know about our brain the way we know about our PSA and our mammograms.
Interesting. I was just speaking with a cardiothoracic surgeon yesterday talking about those same things, hypertension, all these lifestyle changes people that could make that, you know, could keep them from ever having to go to his operating room. And you're saying the same thing with Alzheimer's. A lot of this is preventable just by changing some of our behaviors and as Angel has emphasized, through education.
It is. And again, it starts 20 years before. But if it's preventable things, it may start when you're 20 years old, and we have to start really thinking about it. There is something we say often, and that is what's good for the heart is good for the brain. Mm-hmm. So we are in the same territory with the cardiothoracic surgeon in the sense of preventable things people can do to intervene in their lives to make it better when they don't even think about what it's like when they're 60 or 80.
Tell me more about the Tomorrow Study.
Well, the Tomorrow Study is very interesting because it is looking for the first time for 15 or more years, we only see people with cognitive impairment. Now we're saying we'd like to recruit people 65 to 83 that don't have cognitive impairment. And we would see them twice a year. They'd have blood tests. They'd also have some cognitive testing. And the idea is to see what the factors are that put you into mild cognitive impairment or the early Alzheimer's process. So it's looking at what are the factors that have people go from being cognitively normal to start having memory problems or MCI. It also will use a small dose of a medication that's on the market. It's called pioglitazone, which will reduce your blood glucose just a little bit. But it's the idea, again, that the brain does better with low levels of glucose and not high levels. And the brain likes to metabolize glucose, but it can also stay healthier not metabolizing glucose and metabolizing ketone bodies and other things.
So, you know, alterations in our diet could be a big.
Well, absolutely. And you know, the other thing in Southwest Florida is you have Dr. Perlmutter's book, The Grain Brain, and he's gotten a lot of talk about that. And many of his hypotheses are really there in science in the sense that the brain does better off of carbs. And we all know that the skinny rats live longer than the fat rats and they're smarter. It's adjusting those modifiable factors in a world that's full of stress and 7-Elevens and stops for gasoline where you just tank up on your car as well as yourself and how to change that.
Right. So it sounds like your focus is kind of well beyond the, you know, the research aspects of this in terms of finding new treatments, but also really get into to like a major public health initiative.
Well, we're really trying that and we've really changed our approach and we're now talking about how to keep your brain healthy. And Angel's done a great job. She brought the music issue to us. That's very important. And the art therapy and the other things that people see as maybe softer science, but the data is there to support the fact that they are important.
Angel, can you tell us just a little bit more about that? Perhaps folks who might not be familiar with the concept of art therapy and how that would relate to, you know, helping folks with Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia?
Yeah, art therapy is just a great way to be able to express thoughts and emotions that people aren't able to articulate. And memories, you know, for a split moment, there's stories and memories that come out where people think that they were lost. There's a fantastic movie that we also sponsored. Dr. Sheriff and I spoke on a panel in Fort Myers at the Alliance for the Arts and in Naples called I Remember Better When I Paint. And Berna Huebner is part of the Hillgoes Foundation, and I'm friends with Berna, so I was able to bring her down here and screen her film. And it really is a fantastic blend of showing what the etiology of Alzheimer's disease is, as well as how the arts can be helpful in sustaining quality of life. And so people aren't just sitting around at homes in front of a TV isolated and alone. They're getting active, they're being stimulated, you know, and it's cohesive and you're prolonging quality of life in a dignified manner. And then the music therapy, there's a fantastic movie that won seven different national and international independent film awards called Alive Inside. We also sponsor that. Eric Raddatz from the Fort Myers Film Festival.
Yes.
Kicked it off at Barbara B. Mann, and we were on a panel for that with the director Michael Bennett. And music's one of the oldest expressive arts therapy out there. And there's so much more science behind the music than there is the art, although we're trying to catch up with that. But with music, the whole brain is lighting up, and Dr. Sheriff can definitely talk more about why that's happening on a scientific level better than I can. But I really like the idea of combining the music and the art. And for the music and an art is more, I think, preserving for quality of life and dignity and integrity and empowering the person and stabilizing autonomy. But at the same time, we need research. And the focus, I find, people are either split. They're either all about the science or they're all about just the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And we need both. I mean, it's great that you're painting and it's great that you're listening to music, but we need research to find effective treatments. So you absolutely need both. And I think both those movies with Alive Inside and I Remember When I Better When I Paint do an excellent job in describing how the importance of both are needed.
And well, you guys provide such great natural segues here. Can you go and maybe, as Angel had indicated, maybe talk a little bit about you know, what we are able to see from the benefits of art therapy?
Sure. And music especially. And as Angel said, music has more science to it. And I'm, you know, sort of humbled because when Angel came and joined our team, I was always, you know, trained in medicine and you write a prescription and for every twisted thought, there's a twisted molecule that we have to correct. And then I started learning about music and art. And it's fascinating. Music's the only thing that on a PET scan, which shows how your brain's working, will light up everything, every part of your brain. There's nothing else you can do in a scanner other than listening to music. There's also evidence that listening to music for 1 hour with headphones, music you like, increases dopamine. Now, dopamine is a neurotransmitter that gives you energy, motivation, and focus. If you give a child with ADHD Ritalin, it's really increasing dopamine. So this is increasing dopamine naturally, no pills, and it's really starting a process of working the brain, which is just incredible. So we're suggesting, and we're doing it ourselves, is listening to good music you like for an hour a day with headphones, and it feels better. And it, if you think about it, when I heard the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, that memory was stored with protein back in my brain. And when I'm listening to it again, it's almost exercising the brain and re-stimulating that protein to sort of produce the memory. And, you know, we have smell memories, we have taste memories, and we have all kinds of memories that we can really start using. And how simple is it for everyone to listen to music with headphones? And it's just too simple not to do.
Right, right. Excellent. And enjoyable as well.
Great. Absolutely.
Well, I did want to switch gears just a little bit and talk about another effort you're involved with on the state level. And that was in 2014 when state lawmakers approved the creation of the Ed and Ethel Moore Alzheimer's Disease Research Program. And you were appointed to the advisory board for that. And if I understand correctly, this is kind of a grant program. And you and other members of the advisory panel had, you know, identified different projects or institutions that are looking to do research that could benefit from some state funds.
Yes, I mean that was really an honor. As we know, it also comes home to Southwest Florida because these individuals that the task force was named after are the grandparents of Matt Hudson, Representative Hudson, and he's the one that put this through the legislature and really had $3 million appointed for new research every year. And there's 10 of us on this committee. I'm really quite humbly the only non-academic person there. There's some people from the Mayo Clinic that have done incredible work. There's other very talented people from all the universities. But our job is to really try to get the best grants out there, encourage people to put grants in, and then award the grants to the best kind of new innovative work to try to get more collaboration within the state of Florida. We just have an incredible opportunity, even in Southwest Florida, that I think we're missing because there's so much talent here and we really need to start being partners with each other and start doing work together for the common good. And we can come together, and this committee hopefully will start that process more and more.
Off the top of your head, are there any specific kind of projects that you have seen that have received grants so far through that program?
Yes, and they're in many different areas, but I can tell you they cover everything from genetics and biology to really psychosocial problems. We would love to see grants, for example, for new types of ways to help agitated patients not get medications, new ways to try to help with the Baker Act issue when somebody becomes a danger to themselves or others that has Alzheimer's disease. There's not a good mechanism to keep them out of a system that really doesn't help them at the end. There's also big efforts psychosocially to use things such as music and art and not just necessarily be all basic science types of approaches. So this committee really is open, even though it has a lot of scientists on it, to some of the psychosocial sciences to try to see how we can impact this disease and be better in Florida to sort of lead the nation in projects.
I hadn't really intended to go down this road, but since you brought it up, and it kind of reminded me that the first time we did meet 5 years ago, that was something that we had discussed, was the issue of people with Alzheimer's and being Baker Acted, and how that often perhaps is happening when it might not really be an appropriate or the best course of treatment for those patients. Is that something that you see that happens just far too often?
Way too often. And, you know, the problem is we have 1.6 million Americans warehoused in these 16,000 nursing homes. We don't have good treatments for this disease. And when a person gets agitated, a scared caregiver wife will call 911. The police will take them away and Baker Act them. And then what? And there's not good treatments. And the treatments we have actually are life-threatening. The medications we use have black boxes on them that say patients with dementia have twice the rates of death than those without. And it's really a big problem. And the mental health community has to come together. So does the community in general to face all these issues. And yes, we've had task forces and we have other types of programs here. But unless you really are getting serious about solving the problem and seeing this across the board as a complex disease that needs a lot of expertise from many different areas, it's not going to happen. We are working in our practice and in our research center, and we've gain some partnerships with some very important people to try to put together a task force or a committee or a think tank to try to see if we can get people together to at least get this community on board and maybe be a place in Florida where people will come and say, this is the best kind of cognitive care. Just to carry that one step further, we really need good cognitive care. As Michael Gloth in Naples taught me, anyone can fix a hip. Anyone can operate, but do we give good cognitive care? Do we make sure the anesthesiologist doesn't give too much anesthesia? Do we make sure that the doctor in the ICU knows the difference between delirium and make sure that my mother doesn't fall or get sent home too early, get confused, and then gets readmitted with a fall? People are worried about that, and we need to start making sure we have good cognitive care all the way along the line.
I wanted to go back to funding issues as well. I'd spoken with Representative Hudson before the 2014 session about this very program, the Edna Ethel Moore program there. And besides, of course, his personal involvement in wanting to advance that project, was he was talking about this big disparity that exists when it comes to funding for, you know, finding new treatments for things like Alzheimer's as opposed to the money we spend on research for cancer and heart disease and other issues. And you know, when you look at what's being spent on the state and even on the national level, there's this obvious disparity there, but it's not something you really hear anyone ever talk about.
Well, it's very true, and we really have to change that because this disease will bankrupt us. And despite the social problems, it needs to have more money and the money spent correctly. You know, cancer gets money in the billions, $3 billion, $5 billion. Alzheimer's disease is lucky to get $500 million. And that's just not enough for this type of a disease that is just going to cripple us. It's, you know, Medicare and Medicaid are funding the majority of the problems with it. And the data shows that if you have Alzheimer's disease or a memory impairment, no matter where you go in the medical system, whether you visit your physician, go to a pharmacy, go to a nursing home, a hospital, your costs are way higher than if you wouldn't have cognitive impairment. So with this epidemic here, 45,000 of us now, today, and it's growing, and it's going to be 13, 15 million people in the United States by 2050, it just is incredible what the work we have to do, and it's going to take money.
Do you think Florida in particular, given, as you've already highlighted, our you know, older demographic, population demographic here, given that we're going to be more disproportionately impacted by Alzheimer's, should the state be maybe considering putting more efforts towards funding research here?
Well, I think they need to put more funding, but I think they also need to look at the leadership. You know, one of the problems when you brought up the Baker Act is that we live in an interesting state in the sense that, number one, we don't have a state income tax, so there's not a lot of infrastructure as there are in other states. But the other issue is that drug abuse and mental health has been placed in our state under the Department of Children and Families. And that worked 20, 30 years ago when most of these illnesses were seen as psychosocial illnesses and there wasn't a lot we can do. We now know that, for example, Alzheimer's disease is a biochemical medical disease of the brain, and it really should be under the Department of Health. And, you know, the worry is that we need leadership to appreciate that, and we need the right people that design the programs and make the decisions so the citizens can benefit. I mean, that's the ultimate issue. It's not about who's on the committee and how much money, but does the citizen benefit and is the safety net there in our community, which we're responsible for, there to make sure that people get the best care and the best care possible and have the best shot at having a meaningful life.
I got to speak with many members of the you know, Southwest Florida State Legislative Delegation before this session started, and almost all of them, Representative Heather Fitzenhagen in particular, talked about mental health issues and the disparity that exists in terms of funding there and how that was, you know, going to be their priorities going into session. Of course, the session ended without a budget. They're going back next month. Is that something that concerns you as well, just that even as legislators are talking about it, maybe it won't happen as quickly as we need it to?
Well, it does concern me, but the concept of needing more money concerns me because I am a person who has said for a long time it's not about the money, it's how you spend it. Mm. And you could pour all the money into Southwest Florida that you wanted and it still wouldn't fix the problem until we start addressing what the real problem is. And it's not about money. It's about clinical expertise. It's about switching, in my opinion, from the psychosocial model to the medical model, having our mental health system directed more by that kind of concept. Yes, we need psychosocial models, but we're not even close to trying to provide best practice evidence-based psychiatry to this county yet. And the money's not going to change that.
Right. Well, can you tell us just more generally, because I mean we did talk a little bit about how, you know, there are folks who live in this community who don't even know that we have this great research facility here. What sort of scope of services do you provide? Does it go beyond the sort of clinical trial issues? Is there more kind of like direct patient care that can be provided there too? Or is it all sort of based on research and moving things forward?
No. When I came here in 1989 from Johns Hopkins, we really started as a clinical center providing psychiatric care to patients, and we still do that. So we do provide psychiatric care. We do provide clinical care. We provide free memory screens. And most people that come to us don't end up in a clinical trial, but we certainly give them our suggestions and our thoughts about what they should do next. Angel is a resource for people as well, and people can go to Angel and get anything from a recommendation for an ALF or some aid from the Alzheimer's Association and other things. She can speak to her menu of things that she provides to people, but we really look at the whole person and try to give them the best advice. We talk a lot about preventative care. As we discussed, we do provide psychiatric treatment. We do provide referrals, free memory screens. The whole spectrum, we try to just match what the person needs to what resources we can provide them or that are available in the community.
We also, the big thing too, is we provide free education. Dr. Sheriff and myself and Melissa Sheriff, we are commonly in the community that provide accurate, honest communication about Alzheimer's disease, mental health, other related dementias, all types of things. And, you know, we're not looking to be a scare tactic. It's, you know, this is what it is and these are things you can do. So there is hope and optimistic, but that is one thing is, you know, we provide a number of things that Dr. Sheriff just said, but education is a big one.
And then we have a yearly dementia seminar, which we're pretty proud of, where we have international leaders come in once a year and provide education to the community. So, again, there's just so many things that we'd love to partner with other people, and we could be much stronger together than individually.
Well, hopefully I haven't missed the 2015 seminar. Is that coming up?
Yes.
Yeah, we partner with the Alzheimer's Association, updates on dementia. So we did it last year at Hodges. We had 250 people we had people coming in, flying in early from other states when they found out about the conference. It was really, really fantastic and very informative. And we are looking at doing it next year. We're in the planning process right now.
Dr. Frederick Sheriff, Angel Duncan, any closing thoughts you want to leave us with?
Well, I just want to be very optimistic. And I think this is, you know, a time where you can say we have all these challenges, but we're also in a time where we've learned more about the brain in the last 10 years than the last 10,000 years. And finally, there might be some encouragement, both in treatment, maybe some prevention, but also having people realize that they can control their fate early, and we need to educate and come together and give them the right information. There is a lot of information out there. There's too much, maybe. There is information out there that probably is economically driven, and people have to get the right information, but it's very encouraging.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Frederick Sheriff and Angel Duncan with the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was Dr. Frederick Sheriff, Principal Investigator with the Neuropsychiatric Research Center of Southwest Florida, along with the Center's Director of Research Education, Angel Duncan. That's all the time we have. There's more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows at our website, wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers, Luke Martin and Richard Cinqui. This is WGCU Fort Myers 90.1 FM, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.